The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazines. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from theteenmagazine.com and teenvogue.com. Our first article today from teenvogue.com, 32-Hour Work Week, How Could It Work, and Who Is Advocating for It? This article was written by Seamus Kirst on November 15th. It is estimated that U.S. workers are now more than four times as productive as our predecessors 70 years ago. But the hours we're expected to be on the clock have not gone down. On average, Americans work hundreds more hours a year than Europeans. And globally, worker engagement rates are, in fact, highest in the U.S. and Canada, but 49% of workers in the U.S. and Canada report feeling stressed at their job, according to Gallup's 2024 State of the Global Workplace Report. Now, as AI chatbots disrupt and reshape careers in the creative and legal fields, among others, and automation continues to upend industries such as fast food and manufacturing, some policymakers and industry leaders are calling for and moving toward a four-day, 32-hour work week. With nearly one-third of large U.S. firms exploring new schedules like the four-day work week, according to a 2024 survey of CEOs from KPMG, Senators Bernie Sanders, Independent Vermont, and LaFonza Butler, Democrat California, introduced legislation in the Senate earlier this year calling for a 32-hour work week. While Representative Mark Takano, Democrat California, introduced companion legislation in the House of Representatives. Teen Vogue spoke to Senator Sanders, Una Hardy of 4-Day Week Global, a worldwide organization advocating for the 32-hour work week, and Dr. Juliette Shore, an economist and sociologist at Boston College and a lead researcher on a 2022 4-Day Week Global study in the UK in which 61 companies experimented with a 4-day work week, about what this transformation could look like. What does the congressional legislation call for? The 32-Hour Workweek Act is quite straightforward. It calls for the reduction of the standard workweek from 40 to 32 hours, while protecting workers' pay and benefits. This legislation would require overtime pay be time and a half on days that surpass 8 hours and double an employee's pay for days that exceed 12 hours. How would a 4-day work week benefit workers? Says Hardy, the marketing manager of 4-Day Week Global, there are physical and mental health benefits for workers when they transition to a 4-day work week. You see mental health improving, Hardy tells Teen Vogue. People are less anxious. They have less work stress. They have less burnout as well. That's a really big one. In 4-Day Week Global's trials, Hardy continues, they usually see significant declines in these three mental health-related areas and have found that people exercise and sleep more, improving their physical health as well. Adding an extra day to the weekend gives people more time for themselves, Hardy notes, and allows for social improvements she believes could come from a 4-day work week, a particularly resonant point given that the U.S. Surgeon General has declared an epidemic of loneliness in this country. We often find that people spend a lot of time outdoors and they spend a lot of time with other people, Hardy says. So it's really, really good for them, but also really good for society. Additionally, Hardy says, a 4-day work week has positive environmental impacts. If we are going into work one day less, we are using less electricity, less fuel, she explains. And if there are less people going into the office, there's going to be less traffic. It's almost cumulative in terms of the impact. How could this legislation impact workers across industries? Sure, the Boston College economist and sociologist says via email that the 32-hour work week is viable in all sectors. Retail tends to have a lot of part-time workers, so fewer would be eligible. But it might lead to better schedules for part-timers who are currently subjected to unpredictable scheduling and low wages. Also, Shore explains, her research has found the 32-hour work week works well for small businesses, and she has seen success stories for restaurants and in other service industries. Manufacturing desperately needs work time reduction, she asserts, noting that many employees in this sector are on 12-hour shifts. Historically, manufacturing led the way to shorter hours in the U.S., she says. And, of course, it is such a productive sector, it can afford to reduce hours. How does this connect to AI? Technology has exploded, and AI is going to rapidly, exponentially increase productivity. So the question we're asking is, who is going to benefit from that increased productivity? If you're a writer or you're working in a factory and there is increased productivity, should all of the benefits simply go to the people who own the technology, the large corporations who utilize the technology? The answer, obviously, is no. We want to see workers benefit, ordinary people benefit. Sanders argues that one of the best ways to achieve an economically equitable benefit from the increased productivity likely to stem from AI is by lowering the work week to 32 hours without workers having to sacrifice any of their pay. Why are young people drawn to this idea? A new survey from CNBC Generation Lab of more than 1,000 people age 18 to 34 found that 81% of respondents believe a four-day work week would increase productivity at their company. Beyond productivity, Sanders says, this is also an issue of improving economic conditions for younger generations. I think this is very popular with young people for a couple of reasons, the senator says. Despite all of the increase in technology that we have seen in recent years, young people today, everything being equal, unless we change it, will have a lower standard of living than their parents. Many young people can't afford to get their own apartment or home, Sanders explains, and they are making decisions to delay marriage or have kids because they are swamped with student debt. Senator Sanders continues, the wages that they're earning are less than what their parents made in inflation amounts per dollar, so they're looking at an economy that is working very well for the 1%, but not well for their generation. And they're upset about it, and they're looking at AI coming along, which would make the economy even rougher for them. They say, we want a fair shake, and one of the fair shakes is that we reduce the work week with full pay. For example, Hardy says, a pilot program 4-Day Week Global did in Brazil saw a 4-day work week result in 49% of participants saying they had an improved relationship with leadership. By giving people a better quality of life, Hardy argues, employers will get better quality work. We can give people more time to come back refreshed. They can do better work. They're going to be more productive. Hardy says further that the 4-day work week is an excellent recruitment and retention tool, and thus cuts down on recruitment, hiring, and training costs. Sick leave and absenteeism majorly drop, she notes, pointing to her organization's trial in the UK, where there was a 65% decrease in sick leave across all the companies. One company even had no sick leave during the trial period. What are arguments against the 32-hour workweek? Polling data on the 32-hour workweek has been mixed. A 2022 Gallup survey found people who worked four-day workweeks reported higher rates of burnout, though less active disengagement, compared with those who work 5 days per week, who had higher engagement and lower burnout. These results came 2 years after a similar Gallup survey found that respondents who had four-day workweeks professed significantly higher overall well-being than those with 5-day workweeks. With the 2022 survey, Gallup noted the gap between the two groups had closed. In March, during a Senate Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions hearing about Sanders' legislation, Liberty Vitert, a statistics professor at Washington University in St. Louis, expressed reservations. There is no statistical evidence to merit a nationwide mandate of a 32-hour work week, Vitert said. If it works for some companies in some sectors, that is great, but it cannot be applied to all sectors. During that same hearing, Senator Bill Cassidy, Republican, Louisiana, said the legislation would hurt small businesses such as mom-and-pop restaurants that are not benefiting from AI and would still need to pay workers the same amount for fewer hours worked. Shor, who testified at the hearing in support of the legislation, pushed back against Cassidy's analysis, calling it odd. Small businesses are the ones adopting four-day weeks most commonly, Shor tells Teen Vogue. Fewer big ones have made this transition. What we're seeing in our research is that this works extremely well for small businesses. How realistic is this for the United States? I think the United States is probably one of the places where it's going to be the most difficult because it's probably one of the biggest culture shifts that has to happen, Hardy says. Everyone knows about American work culture and, you know, how toxic it can be. But I do think that there has definitely been a massive shift in the way we view work since the pandemic. We realized that we could do things from home. We didn't. We don't have to go into the office. And I think the next thing that is to come from that is a reduction in work time. Some U.S. companies like Kickstarter currently have a 4-day work week, while others, like Shake Shack, have experimented with them in the past. Sanders says people nationwide are receptive to the idea, but there needs to be an expansion of the movement for economic justice. To the degree that we can develop a political movement in this country which says we want the benefits of AI to go to workers and not the 1%, that's the day we make this happen, he explains. And I would also say, very importantly, that this is not a radical idea. The polling shows it is very, very popular among the American people. How can people get involved in this movement? There is a free guide on the 4-Day Week Global website called How to Convince Your Boss to Trial a 4-Day Work Week, which Hardy suggests people check out. Step one is to basically start reading the research, get the figures ready so that you're armed with the knowledge to prove not only does this benefit employees, but it'll benefit employers as well, she explains. I think one of the biggest things with convincing your boss is to tell them, look, you're not going to lose money. You're not going to lose people. You're not going to lose productivity. You're actually going to gain in all of these areas. Sanders notes that change does not happen unless people get involved in the political process. What we are talking about now is a political issue, he says, and people have got to stand up and fight for justice. And this is part of the justice fight. Who benefits from an exploding technology which makes workers more productive? Is it the people on top, or is it working people? It's as simple as all that. And I hope people get involved in that struggle. Our next article from theteenmagazine.com. Anna Kendrick makes her directorial debut in Woman of the Hour. This article was written by Ariana Shapiro on November 10th. Anna Kendrick's film, Woman of the Hour, left me disturbed and haunted. As a young woman in our society, you never know when you will stumble across a man without a conscience who chooses to commit violent acts against women. This film is based on the true story of Rodney Alcala, serial predator and murderer, who endears himself to unsuspecting victims and then brutally ends their lives. Alcala knows how to present himself. He is attractive and always says the right things. One of the most chilling aspects of the film is how drastically the killer's calm demeanor contrasts with the horrific crimes he commits. The audience is left to wonder why he commits these heinous crimes. Is he filling an emotional void? In this film, Kendrick could have done a better job unraveling his emotional and mental state. The Dating Game. Kendrick makes her directorial debut and plays Cheryl, an aspiring actress who ends up on The Dating Game with serial killer Rodney Alcala as one of the contestants and bachelors. The Dating Game was a game show in the 70s where a single woman was given a choice between three bachelors after speaking with them. While The Dating Game is part of the film, there's a much more distressing story that unfolds throughout. Daniel Zovato plays Alcala, and Zovato is outstanding in this role. He simultaneously radiates creepiness and charisma. Kendrick gives us insight into the day-to-day life of this serial killer, which includes a full-time job where he engages in casual conversations with coworkers. Even the police are charmed by Alcala when they interview him and ultimately release him to resume his killing spree. The police fail to investigate Alcala fully, which allows him to murder more than 100 women after successfully deceiving them. We will never know exactly how many women Alcala victimized. Growing up, Alcala did well in school and was popular with his peers. During adulthood, he was diagnosed with antisocial personality disorder, borderline personality disorder, and malignant narcissism. Alcala appears emotionally balanced when he first interacts with his victims, and then mid-interaction, he becomes psychotically unhinged. The audience observes a change in his eyes as his mental state transitions. Once Zovato switches into predator mode, nothing can stop his murderous rampage. Praise as manipulation. Alcala lures in his victims by telling them how beautiful they are. He intentionally targets women who are seeking words of affirmation. The women whom he attacks are marginalized for the most part. One of his victims, a runaway teen, is stealing coins from a laundromat prior to being preyed upon by Alcala. He tells the victims he will capture their beauty with his camera since he is a photographer. Then he takes them to scenic spots in the desert and mountains to photograph them. He is a ferocious predator, capturing his prey with the click of his camera. The audience sees the victims eerily framed within Alcala's lens before he takes their lives. Forced intimacy. Through manipulation, Alcala creates a seemingly intimate connection with these women before murdering them. According to the Bureau of Justice statistics, 34% of women victims are killed by an intimate partner. By definition, Intimacy means private and personal. Alcala definitely managed to get private and personal with his victims prior to abusing them. Giving compliments that are insincere is a tactic some men use to create a sense of forced intimacy, and Alcala certainly used this strategy to his advantage. Kendrick makes an interesting creative choice. She obscures the attacks by filming them at a distance or very close up and blurred. She acknowledges the sad fact that at times women must come off as submissive in order to escape dangerous situations. In the end, a teen runaway successfully manages to escape death by smiling and laughing with Alcala after he attacks her. She pretends that she is willing to accept future abuse from him, and then she escapes and calls the cops. The victim-perpetrator relationship. This was a solid movie, but it would have been more captivating if Kendrick spent less time developing her character, the aspiring actress, and more time exploring the complexities of the victim-perpetrator relationship and the mind of a serial killer. The topic of violence should be given even more time and attention in this film, rather than focusing on the lifestyle of an aspiring actress in Los Angeles. Why do these women crave Alcala's attention and positive reinforcement? How was Alcala able to carry on a seemingly regular life while committing countless murders? After the film ends, many questions are left lingering in my mind. Our next article from TeenVogue.com. Rihanna is all in on wearing lingerie in any way you want. This article was written by Ashley Carter on October 12th. Rihanna isn't known for shying away from a bold style choice. The musician has become famous for more than just her business empire and discography. She's a prominent figure in the fashion world. So when Rihanna says she likes a trend, you know it's serious. Case in point, wearing lingerie outside of the privacy of your own home. As the founder and visionary behind the lingerie brand Savage Fenty, Rihanna has the credentials to comment on the ongoing style choice to wear corsets, bras, and more intimate clothing as part of an outfit. Rihanna recently made an appearance at Nordstrom, located at the Century City Mall in Los Angeles, for the launch of her Savage Fenty Lavish Lace collection, and spoke about how and when lingerie should be worn while wearing some of her own. Lingerie, to me, should be worn any way and anywhere that you want, Rihanna told People. Whether you want it to be seen on display outside of t-shirts or inside a jacket falling off, or just to be cozy or just to have a little support, it doesn't matter. Because the event was centered around her own collection, Rihanna wore a piece from the recent Savage Fenty collaboration with Diesel, the camo lace corset slip. The sheer army green corset looked chic and form-fitting on Riri, who paired the look with matching tights, black jeweled heels, and a luxurious fuzzy coat. Rihanna's crop hair was parted to the side, shout out millennial side parts, and given that wet, scrunched look. For accessories, she kept it simple with just a large ring on her finger and earrings. The star of the show truly was the lingerie, after all. The mom of two boys also says that putting together an outfit these days that is not sweats or PJs, she feels like she's championed her way through. If I can put on a little lingerie every now and then, if I can just feel like I did something, a little makeup, brush my hair, those are big accomplishments in my life these days, Rihanna continued. Of course, Rihanna isn't the first to revolutionize wearing lingerie in public. But she has had many major style moments incorporating lingerie into her outfits. Many celebrities, influencers, and fashion icons have been doing it for years. Slip dresses have become more and more popular, while corsets have become a staple going out piece. Our next article today from TeenVogue.com. Miranda Cosgrove just teased iCarly's return. We have something in the works. This article was written by Sarah Delgado on November 14th. Is iCarly coming back? Well, if Miranda Cosgrove is to be believed, it sure looks like it. As reported by Deadline, Miranda Cosgrove teased a new iCarly project is in the works, and it will reportedly tie things up after the cliffhanger ending of 2021's Paramount Plus revival. I'm not allowed to 100% confirm anything yet, but I think the fans of the show are going to be super excited because we have something in the works, Cosgrove said during an interview with The Talk. We actually ended the revival on a cliffhanger, and we're going to wrap that up. The original iCarly show, starring Cosgrove, Jeanette McCurdy, and Nathan Kress, among others, aired on Nickelodeon from 2007 to 2012. Paramount Plus rebooted the series in 2021, sans McCurdy, picking up the story 10 years after the original show's timeline. The rebooted iCarly aired its last episode on July 27, 2023, with the streamer canceling the show after three seasons. iCarly will not be returning for a fourth season on Paramount Plus. The series had a great three-season run and delivered on what fans really wanted to see with Carly and Freddie finally getting together. We want to thank the entire cast, the writers, directors, and producers, along with the whole crew for their dedication, creativity, and talent, a Paramount Plus spokesperson said at the time of cancellation. Despite what that quote claims, the show's final episode left some questions unanswered, namely the future of Carly and Freddie's romantic relationship and the identity of Carly's mother, which this new project would ideally answer. We've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.